Keeping the Castle. I'm Clarissa Levy, Art and Heritage Counsel at Wedlake Bell.
And I'm Richard Harwood, a barrister at 39 Essex Chambers.
And we're joined today by Charles Barkley, owner of Barkley Castle. Charles, thank you so much for joining us.
Hello.
So would you like to tell us about what it was like growing up in Barkley Castle?
Yes, I grew up at Barkley Castle with my brother. We were 11 months apart in age. So for two children, growing up in a medieval, 12th century castle was fantastic. We spent the winter months there and the summer months in Worcestershire. And it's very much your typical castle with a dungeon, turrets, windy staircases, big oak doors, a banqueting hall and acres of roof space. And we spent a lot of time exploring different rooms of the castle. We'd go up onto the roof, which had lead and copper covering, and we'd look at visitors exploring the castle in the courtyards, and it was wonderful. The oldest part, the 12th century part, was where our bedrooms were. So we were a long way up from my parents, about three or four floors, and we certainly made the most of being in the castle. As children, there were always people coming and going, whether it was people working at the castle for the business or visitors. That could be visitors to the castle. It could be people filming in the castle. It could be for an event or a wedding, or it could be someone working on the castle walls or doing some maintenance. And it was always exciting. There were always people around, and it was always fun getting school friends around to the castle. A lot of them didn't realize that you actually lived in these places. And it was very exciting. We were very lucky, and we were always told you are custodians of these great places. And that was, I think, very important for us growing up, to know that we had pride in these places as children, that we were very lucky to be able to live in these places. And we certainly made the most of it growing up. It was cold at times, but yeah, magical.
I absolutely love that you say it was your typical castle.
Yes.
Because to me, of course, it's completely unimaginable. 9 centuries of your family living, and I believe it's the oldest building in the country inhabited by the family that built it.
Yes.
So to me, it is obviously, to anyone, there's no such thing as a typical castle. And it's lovely to hear from you about what the joys of castle life as a child were. And also, of course, you mentioned that it was cold, so that's, I suppose, one of the challenges, of which there must be many as well.
Yes, that's one of the main challenges. I remember people coming to events within the castle in the banqueting hall or in other rooms, and you'd get the draft coming through all the doors as people came in, and it was certainly quite cold. We had big open fires, it's gas heated, but we've certainly done a lot to make it more comfortable now. It's a castle, really. It's run as a business now. My mother lives in a part of it, but it's very much a business. It's being used for business a lot more than it was. And yes, with that comes challenges, the maintenance of the building, the heating and electrics, all the other issues around the health and safety of visitors and people around the castle. It's a huge challenge, but a wonderful building. And I think it's important that these buildings are maintained and looked after, and lovely that families are able to use buildings such as this.
But you don't stay in a castle for 9 centuries without modernising it and making it livable. So actually, modernising the castle is one of the things that I find so interesting. How on earth do you heat it and keep it suitable for modern life?
Well, it's gas heated. There's an underground heat room underneath the castle grounds. And we recently, in the last 10 or 12 years, rewired and redid the electrics heating in the castle. It was a huge project. My mother found some dodgy wires and I think went to our trustees and said, we have an issue here. Nothing had been done for several generations. And it fell upon our generation to do the rewiring and heating. And there were miles of electrics and cables, and every floorboard was marked. And the work took, I think, about 2 years, and we're still repaying that work, but it needed to be done. And there were the obvious dangers of people living and working within the building and visitors, and we took it upon ourselves to get that work done. So the wire cabling is a lot better than it was. The electrics, we now have proper socket plugs with the smaller, old-fashioned pin sockets, which are still there, which we've still kept on the walls, but we've now updated in every room. We have Wi-Fi, although it's not always as strong as it could be, but a huge advance on where we were. And the castle is actually relatively warm. I was only in there last night for a gathering of our friends of Berkeley, and the Great Hall was lovely and warm. And even without a fire, it's, you have those rising costs, obviously, with what we've done, but it's more comfortable. And dare I say it, we've brought the castle into the modern age, I think, fairly well.
How have you found that process of modernisation and working with the local authority and no doubt Historic England, because it's all Grade One listed, to make it usable whilst respecting the fabric of what you have?
Well, we've had our challenges, and at every stage we've done what we needed to do with authorities. Historic England were very particular about changes of use of rooms and not taking any doors down and changing too much. But we've, I think, adapted well. A couple of rooms that we've adapted for our visitors and for our wedding guests. And we had to make some small changes, and they've been very good about the whole process. They understand it's a heritage building, and within reason, I think we did a very good job when we made quite a lot of updates and changes, which we had to keep it running as a business as well as a lived-in castle. But yes, there was no way. I mean, the private side of the castle where my mother still lives hasn't changed too much. We haven't turned existing kitchens into new modern functioning kitchens, but where we have made small changes, we haven't seemed to have a problem. And Stroud, very much local authority, has been kept updated with any plans for the castle and other parts of the business connected to the castle, and have been very much on our side. But you have to tread carefully, and there's obviously certain things that we haven't been able to do, which we'd like to do. But I think it's respecting the building and aiding all those who come and visit the castle and making it safe and updating it as to how we would like it. So we haven't had too many challenges, thank goodness.
Is there anything in particular you would have liked to do that you just haven't been able to do for whatever reason?
Well, I think one of the things is a sort of working kitchen, in terms of we have a lot of weddings and events, and we have caterers that we use, local caterers, and they've had to bring in equipment. I think it was always talked about at times. It'd be nice to have an all singing, dancing, working kitchen within the castle walls, and we just haven't really been able to get round how we would do that. We've got lovely old existing kitchens with a 15th century timber roof and the old tables and spits and everything, which is a record of the kitchen and how it was used over the years. And we adapt, and the caterers now bring in their cookers and leave them in the old buttery and work from there and prepare food with modern day equipment in an old room. So that was one of the things that would have been nice to have done. And I think we've always thought we'd love to have some more exhibition space, a sort of more modern room that we could adapt out of an existing room, but we haven't been able to do that. Instead, we have a building which we converted outside of the castle, an old garage, into an education room. And we were able to make that change fairly easily. But yes, one or two things to support the business within the castle. We've often thought about how we can get around those challenges, but actually we've adapted, and I think we've succeeded fairly well. We've done up recently our kitchen garden, got a new restaurant building and ticket office within that space, and we'll use it for other events. And again, through Stroud planning, we managed to get around the height of the building and any restrictions within that old kitchen garden fairly well. And there were different levels of ground as well. But we worked alongside Stroud, and any planning issues we overcame. And I think we've done very well. And that'll be somewhere we can use out of the season and successfully, hopefully, build on that. And it'll be, I think, a lovely space to have for local people outside of the season as well as during the season.
It sounds like such a beautiful place to grow up. And one of the unimaginable things to me, apart from living in a castle, is how you can live in a place which is also a business, and what it's like to grow up in a home which is also open to the public. What was that like?
I personally, from a young age, that's what we always knew, the castle open to visitors. It opened to visitors in the 50s and then started doing one in the 60s and 70s. And I was born in 1968. And I think we'd been quite well established as a visitor attraction, as a place that was open. There was lots of different things going on. And actually, it was all I knew growing up. And actually, I've enjoyed that side of it, meeting people, discussing plans for the season coming, looking at the challenges. And even as a teenager and into my 20s, I was very much involved in some of those decisions along with the family. There was all that was talked about with my father and others and other trustees from a young age. And I knew that the castle was a very much a family house and a working space, and appreciated that. And actually, it was the norm. And I sort of thrived on a busy castle and lots going on. I actually quite enjoyed it. I think there are times when my parents have probably found there's often too much going on and they're quite private people, and living in that goldfish bowl has its challenges. But certainly for my sake, I've always loved that and enjoy talking to people and learning more about what makes the castle the building it is and what people like about it. So yes, I think there are always people around, and you walk out of your front door and there could be a film crew out there, or it could be a group of wedding visitors coming to see the castle for viewing, or there might be 100 tourists coming on a bus and having tours. But I quite enjoy meeting people and seeing the castle being used. So it hasn't been too much of an issue for me.
And how else has the castle been used? You've tried, obviously, you've mentioned weddings and tourism. And as a business, what are some of the things that you've tried that have worked best, and what things have worked least well?
I think our weddings, we realised that was going to be a major source of income for us, was weddings, and we do them quite well. And you know what you're getting. Weddings are planned a year, sometimes 2 years in advance on the whole. And I think we do that fairly well. We're known for doing that. I think in terms of as a film location, certainly in the last 20 years, we've had some quite big dramas, Wolf Hall and Poldark and some other historical dramas. And I think what we offer is good. And I think we do that very well. The team at the castle are very conscientious of the building and what we can offer. And I think that's often a challenge with houses, and some people would rather not do that. But I think our offer is very good. And the castle as a building lends itself well to that in terms of what's needed. And we have done concerts, outdoor concerts, which I think were all the rage back in, certainly in the 80s and 90s. And we had stages built up on a massive sort of field in front of the castle. And we did those for a few years. But I think we realized after time that can be slightly risky. We're on a sort of flood zone. And we've had several events that have been called off because of the rain and the flooding at the fields in front. We've had jousting events, which we did very successfully again in the 90s. But then we found the challenge again of heavy rainfall, even during the middle of the summer, and events being cancelled and organisers losing a lot of money. So definitely those outdoor events have been more challenging. But there again, when we first did them and brought these events in, they were very popular locally and from people further afield. So it's that challenge of having an offer, and obviously Mother Nature and the weather and the unseen and the unknown challenges there. So I think looking back, there are one or two events that probably were a little risky, but we did them, as such as I mentioned. And then others, which we do very successfully. We have now have a smaller jousting event in the gardens, not using the wider water meadow, which is more contained. It's still very good entertainment for families, and it's what people like, and we get good feedback from it. So we've compromised and done these smaller events within the grounds. There are issues, obviously, with those, but they've been working well recently and have been a success. And then lots of events for children, including sort of treasure hunts and Halloween events where we decorate the castle. And I think we have a team who work very closely together to make sure those events run well, and they've been a success. So yes, a bit of both, really.
Did I read somewhere that it actually used to be one of the defences of the castle, that it was flooded on purpose, the water meadow?
It was. There was a sluice gate coming from the Reens, which is an old West Country word for a sort of water ditch, steep ditch with banks on either side. And the Little Avon goes into these Reens, and the water meadow runs alongside these Reens. And just recently, actually, that whole meadow field was flooded. It was like a lake. I remember growing up seeing 4 or 5 fields in front of the castle all flooded. And yes, it was a defensive move. They were able to flood all the water meadows in front of the castle to defend against the enemy, And you can see the sort of natural layout of the ground, very flat, and these big ditches with lots of water in, was a very good defensive ploy and repelled many an enemy, I think.
In terms of the history of the castle, I think it was constructed as part really to keep the Welsh out, wasn't it?
It was, Richard, yes. We're not far from the River Severn, and yes, they were the enemy back in the early days.
And then Cromwell's forces finally did breach the castle.
They did. We came under attack during the Civil War over a four-year period, and I think the castle changed hands several times, and there was a breach made, which we've never rebuilt. There was a story going around we'd have to go through an Act of Parliament to get it rebuilt again, but I think it's now a feature, and we have a platform and information boards about where the breach is, and people can stand and look over the top, and we've made it, I think, quite fun for families to learn more about what did happen in the Civil War. But yes, it was very much under attack.
But it seemed to survive very well because so many castles were, in the language, slighted afterwards and really left as ruins. But Berkeley Castle seems to have got through the last nine centuries pretty well.
It did. And I think we were very good at remaining on the right side of the king or queen at the time. And some deals were done. And I think that was the key during certain times in history. And that's why I think, yes, there's still family there today.
You mentioned sort of the team a few times in terms of what goes on with the castle. How many people work to keep the castle, and to what extent are there volunteers helping as well?
The full-time team, we have an office within the castle of, I think, 10 or 12 of us. And then there are cleaning staff, maintenance team, gardening team. And as you said, volunteers. We now have quite a few volunteer guides or stewards at the castle, as well as in the gardens, helping out where they can. And yes, we're always getting volunteers keen. They've either grown up in the area or have an interest in history or in gardens. And it's wonderful that you can get this group of people. It's quite difficult to find people who are really keen, but there seem to be in the last few years, people keener to come and be involved with the castle. So I think with volunteers, as well as the permanent, I think we're about 80 altogether. And it's like a big family. Everyone gets on really well. Everyone communicates well together, works well together. And I think that's important when you have buildings such as this and grounds too.
It's a lot to organise, clearly. Of all the challenges and all the things you've got to think about, what is the thing that keeps you up at night?
Well, I think one of the things is planning for the next sort of so many years in my life that I'm going to be involved with the castle and being able to pass it on to the next generation. I think it's knowing that you're going to have farms that are on the estate, wider estate, that are running well, that we're doing the right thing at the right time now, that we've got money going into certain projects that makes it easier for the next generation to take on an estate as well as a castle, and that what we're doing fundamentally within the castle business is what we really want to do and is working for us. Sometimes you worry what our visitors, what our clients do think about the experience they have in the castle. And I sometimes think, oh, I wonder, having met a couple getting married or someone taking on the castle for an event, what they think of what we offer as a product. So it's that constantly sort of thinking, what are we doing well? What could we do better? What do people want? And particularly when it's a busy time and there are lots of different events going on, you're trying to sort of juggle all these things and what can we do better and what are other people doing? And I go to historic house meetings and see and hear what other people are doing. And sometimes I think, oh gosh, we could be doing that, but would it work for us? Or do you think this is something that we could do? And sometimes you realize actually, no, for whatever reason, we couldn't do that, like this particular house or this place is doing or estate. And so, yes, I think it's a sort of worry of, are we doing all we can be doing to keep an estate and castle current and running successfully and sort of profit making? And the other thing is the next generation. I just have a daughter and she will inherit the castle and estate. And I want to set various things up to make it easier for her in her time, and hope that she has an interest at the moment, history. She quite enjoys her history. But with one child, I suppose there's pressure. You want that child to do what they want to do in their life, but she knows it's there. And I sometimes think this is the right thing, isn't it? That we're keeping it going, that the family are able to use the castle at times, that she can enjoy being around the estate or on it in the future. Or will she want to? She might be taken elsewhere and not have that interest. So yes, there are a few things that keep me awake at night, but I like to think that you try and do the right thing every day. We've got a wonderful team working with us, and that's a real help. And they want input from the family. We have wonderful input from the team and trustees, and that is important. But yes, the inevitable sort of lying awake thinking, how could you do it better? But on the whole, hopefully I sleep quite well.
Good to hear. Am I right in thinking that your mother lives there, doesn't she?
She does. She has a wing in the castle, and she loves the castle as a building. And my parents spent time between Berkeley Castle and Spetchley Park, another estate in Worcestershire. But she always loved those winter months and going to Berkeley and the building itself and the grounds and the people.
And if you could imagine your mother, who's lived in the castle, obviously, if you could imagine, what advice would she give to your daughter taking it on in the future?
I think she would say, have a good sense of humour. I think a lot of people will look to you as the lady of the house or the estate. And I think an ability to be able to get on with people, to be friendly. I think just to do things the right way, just take advice. I think she would say, take advice from others. And I think she'd say it's important for you to enjoy the castle, enjoy the estate as much as you can, get the most from it, and appreciate it. Whatever you're doing, remember it's always going to be there and you will be the one that people will look to, but don't let that overcome you. I think just to be, I think, fairly relaxed and open to suggestions, but very much be your own person and don't feel too weighed down by that responsibility, because there are people there who can help. And hopefully one day, if she has a family, they'll all be part of that as well and she can enjoy it.
Yeah, the 9 centuries are not going to end here. So there's always got to be a way of evolving and moving on with the next generation.
Yes.
So Charles, thank you so much for a really wonderful insight into life and your family at Berkeley Castle.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Clarissa.
Yeah, Charles, thank you.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you for listening to the Art and Heritage Law Contested Heritage. Please do follow or subscribe on Apple or Spotify podcasts to enjoy more shows.
We have a new podcast out every fortnight. If you're able, please take the time to rate us and put down a review.
The show is also on the 39 Essex Chambers website, along with podcast series on topics such as artificial intelligence, climate change, and planning.